Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This episode contains descriptions of gun violence and gangs. Listener discretion is advised.
TJ, my loving brother TJ. Every time I talk about him, I start off by saying my birthday December 9th, 87, his birthday December 8th, 88.
Oh my gosh. Wait. Right. No, I was born December 3rd, 87.
Brother, oh, yeah. Come on, hang up,
man. Natasha and her little brother, TJ, grew up in Newark, New Jersey in the 90s and early 2000s.
He was stuck on me like glue. My mother made us do everything together. So we grew up like, you know, he was the annoying brother. Even though I was the oldest, he wouldn't let me act like the oldest. We were goofy kids. Always got jokes, always cracking up and things like that. But besides that, TJ was very spiritual in his own. Like, we grew up in the church, but he took it to another level. Always prayed, always praying for people. You'll find him outside with like a blanket on, like he a robe, have a robe and a staff, like he Moses, and he just spent it. He was a character.
Most kids play like Superman, and yes. TJ played Moses.
He played Moses. And by the time we got to high school, he started to like grow into himself. He was ordained as a prophet a whole ceremony at the age of 16, because he had been preaching probably since he was like 13, 14.
Wow.
And he was just like, he was just this big, bright thing.
Newark at this time wasn't the safest city in the world. It was, by many accounts, one of the most dangerous cities in America. But Natasha kept away from all that.
What was it like growing up in Newark?
I had fun. We had so much fun. Like, we knew, like, you know, heard of the dangers. We lost people throughout the years and things like that. But it's so much fun in the summertime.
So how aware were you of how was it dangerous? How much did you know about that?
Yeah, I might have had a family member that was gangbanging and stuff, but that was their life. You know what I'm saying? You heard little myths and stories and things like that. But, like, you know, you listen to the news. The idea was, if you wasn't in that life or living that life, you know, it shouldn't bother you.
The life Natasha was living was all about marching band. She was, and still is, a proud band geek.
Me and my friends, we're still like heavy in the band community. We travel to go see the bands. We go to battle of the bands. You know, we go to homecoming. So we still marching band out.
So was her friend Deshaun, who she met when she transferred to a new middle school.
I'm transferring in the middle of the school year. And it was a culture shock for me because I had just came from a Catholic school, private school.
Oh.
And so then I was going to a public school, and I've always heard like stories about this public school or whatever. So I was just like, oh my God, I'm going to get beat up. I'm like just a little scared. And I end up, two kids took a really good liking to me, my friend Gloria and Deshaun. They was already like really clicked. They had their own little clique. And so I joined their clique.
After being in band her freshman year, she got her best friend, Iofemi Hightower, to join her their sophomore year.
So it was history from there. We all became bandheads.
Natasha and Deshaun were going into their sophomore year at Delaware State together, and Iofemi and TJ were going to join them there that fall. So August 4th, 2007, the four of them, Natasha, her brother TJ, Deshaun, and Iofemi, were all together, and they were trying to find more people to hang out with or just someone's house to go to.
We were 18, 19, 20 years old. Everybody is just not available. And so we just like, okay, let's, we can go to Mount Vernon because we knew some of the guys that used to play basketball up there. Mm-hmm. So we knew it was like, you know, a little chill spot or whatever, out the cut.
It's just a place to be.
Yeah, just chilling. Like, you know what I mean?
Mount Vernon was an elementary school on the west side of Newark.
So we drive up. We have the car playing on the radio. We got the doors open. There's a set of bleachers. There's two people sitting on the bleachers. It's a big playground, right? So nobody's paying attention to them.
Yeah.
We thinking they're not paying attention to us. We're me, Iofemi, and Deshaun, we're having regular conversation. We joking around. We talking about school, whatever. My brother, he's walking back and forth between us, and he has some monkey bars, and he's on his phone. At some point, as we're chilling, my brother texts me, said, it's time to go. Sometimes TJ could be that party pooper, and it's just like about 10:30, 11 o'clock. So we're just like, ooh, why we gotta go, or whatever. So instead of arguing with him, by this time, he's Iofemi brother as well, right? Because we spent so many years together.
Yeah.
So I was like, your brother said it's time to go. And so she just like, man, for what? Like, here we go. And I'm just like, I text him back. I say, for what? And he doesn't text me back. I look up. He's walking towards me or whatever. He's walking in the haste. And he was just like, it's time to go now.
TJ had seen four more young men join the two that were already on the bleachers. And he knew this could only mean trouble.
This is Live to Tell, the podcast where I talk to some of the bravest people who have been through the most horrifying things and lived to tell the tale. I'm Caitlin Van Maul.
I'm like, since you want to leave, you can drive or whatever. So now TJ's on the driver's side. I'm on the passenger side. Iofemi's in back of me. Deshaun's in back of TJ. As soon as we put our hands on the to get in the car, the group of guys, they started circling. It's like, you know what the F it is. Get on the ground. You know what is this, that, and the third.
Mm-hmm. So TJ had seen the four guys coming, and that's why
he said it's time to go. Yeah. Okay. They had machetes and guns. I've heard stories of people getting robbed and things like that. So I'm thinking, Lord, they're about to take this car. What am I going to tell my dad? Mm-hmm. Like, I know Iofemi had just got paid. I know Deshaun just got a new sidekick.
A sidekick was a very cool phone at the time. Like Paris Hilton had one.
You know, this is when sidekicks was lit or whatever. And so, like, and I remember those moments where as they run at us and check in our pockets and stuff, they ask if we had anything. If they find anything, they're going to kill us. So I volunteer, like, my pocketbook is in the car. Iofemi, she don't say anything. And I know she has money on her. And I'm just like, and she was a fighter as well. So they ended up, like, checking her and getting her money. In all those moments, my head is on the ground. And I'm just saying, Jesus, 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 because I don't know what to do.
With the four friends on the ground face down, Natasha and Iofemi on one side, TJ and Deshaun on the other, the six men piled into Natasha's car for a discussion.
They all get in the car. I guess they have a conversation about whatever. They get back out the car. At some point, I see Deshaun and TJ get up from under the car. I feel like two people, I don't even know who it is because I can't see them, but they're starting to touch on me and feel on me. The court say a digital penetration, just like touching on my private parts, but I'm laying down or whatever. Somebody had their knee on my back and I could feel them put my hair up, and I'm still just laying there not knowing what's going on, but I start seeing blood coming out my shoulder. Somebody had a knife and they start to try to cut my shoulders and my neck. So now I see blood and I'm just like, what is going on?
While Natasha was being attacked, TJ, Deshaun, and Iofemi were taken behind a wall.
With this particular school ground, it's a big old play yard, and then there's like some steps, like 6 to 7 steps leading down to a sunken place, they called it. And it was a wall.
Natasha doesn't know why she was singled out and not taken with the others down to the wall.
In so many ways, too, I think it was probably to separate the girls from the boys. Now, Iofemi is not a boy, but she dressed like a boy. She had a fitted one. She had a cap on and stuff. She had a baggy shirt and stuff like that. So I don't know what they thought with that or whatever, but I don't know why they separated us. So I pushed myself up off the ground, like, because now this is going totally too far.
Right.
So I'm like, what's going on? And then I'm missing me yelling or whatever, I hear 2 gunshots. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, don't do that, don't do that.
There were actually 3 shots. And they were coming from the sunken place where TJ, Iofemi, and Deshaun were taken.
Iofemi, a fighter. They say that she was fighting them and they had a machete. And so as she was fighting, one of the boys was slashing her with the machete. And at some point, made them all 3 kneel down and shot them in the back of the head.
TJ Ariel, Iofemi Hightower, and Deshaun Harvey all died from the gunshots to their head. But Natasha only heard the shots. She didn't know they had been killed. So she didn't even have time to think what the shots meant, because
I see somebody running from upstairs with a gun. Pow, he shot.
Natasha had been shot in the head.
After that, I walk, I fall. Boom. I'm laying there, but I'm talking to myself. And I don't think, and where we're at is kind of secluded. So I'm like, I don't know if anybody gonna hear us. Like, but I'm like, I gotta go see what's going on with them or whatever. So I feel myself like trying to climb. For me, because I was shot in the ear.
Mm-hmm.
I do start to hear like, it sound like I'm in water. Because when I get up, I'm having this pounding headache and I just lay down. At some point, I do hear the ambulance, but I don't think they're coming to get me. They come and they swoop me up. I'm telling them, like, y'all can leave me here. It's some kids behind that wall. And I'm trying to tell them. They're trying to put breathing tubes on my nose and stuff. I'm snatching the breathing tubes. I'm throwing up. All types of things is going on. Next thing I see, white, and that's it.
Natasha woke up in the hospital. She was disoriented, not just from the meds or the trauma of what happened, but
at the time I had contacts. They had to do surgery on me. So they taking my contacts. Everything is blurry. I can't see. Like, you know, it's people coming to visit me. I could tell you some people that came to visit me, but I can't tell you everybody because my eyesight wasn't that good. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Glasses. I'm asking people, where is TJ and Iofemi Deshaun? Did they make it? Are they alive? No one's answering me. Maybe they're in another hospital room. They can't be dead. My Iofemi mom comes to the hospital and she's like, she can't talk. She's mumbling. My mom is like trying to just be normal mom. You know, when she leaves the room, I'm trying to like think of somebody that's going to tell me. Because I'm like, now I'm getting the gist of something. Something's happening. Y'all, I know when someone's not answering me, right? Then someone visits the room and I say, do you know what happened to TJ Iofemi Deshaun? And that person goes, they dead, girl. And so my mom comes in the room and I tell her, you know, like, mom, I know. Like, you know, apparently my mom is teed off, okay? She go on the phone. Next thing I know, the whole hospital shut down. I got 5 visitors that could come to the hospital. And after mommy shut the hospital down, the guy I was dating at the time and my dad was always there.
Natasha's mom didn't want her to know about the others because Natasha was already in critical condition, and she didn't want to add to what she was already going through.
I'm just like, what the heck just happened? Like, you know what I mean? Don't know how to handle this situation.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm in, you know, the seven stages of grief. Like, I'm in shock. I'm in denial. I'm just like, what does death mean? I'm trying to kind of just like, death.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't feel she could really release her emotions.
I cannot break down. I cannot break down because if I break down, what are these people going to do? People, they walk in the room, they see me, they just start crying. I'm just like, it's okay. It's going to be all right. When Ms. Mickey, Iofemi mom's coming to the room, I'm just apologizing. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, I am put these people together. I'm the driver. That's my brother. That's my best friend. That's my friend. I know, thank God, it wasn't just my decision, because that probably would have took another toll on me. So it was me and Iofemi's decision. Even to this day, there was, it felt like some sense of responsibility. Like, how did we end up in this situation? Like that. We didn't even argue with those people. We didn't have an argument. We didn't say, like, you know, F you, this, that, nothing. We didn't say anything to those people.
And this is all while she's healing from being shot in the head.
Can you tell me exactly the injuries that you had?
Okay. So, the famous question was, how did the bullet was able to wrap around and then come out this way?
Though the shooter was in front of her, the bullet entered behind her left ear and exited out the left side of her face.
He was in front of you.
He was in front of me. And so what I think happened was I turned my head.
Yeah.
When he shot me. So that bullet comes out. It blows up my eardrum. Tear my ear off. Blow out my jawbone. And I had bullet fragments in my sinus area. That left my face droopy. Really droopy. My range of motion was off. My equilibrium was off. So, in the hospital bedside, she sewed my ear back on. That was excruciating. I had a tube in my stomach so they could take fatty tissues out my stomach to pack my ear. I said they should have took more fat out of the stomach, but that's a whole nother thing. The tube, my skin started to heal around the tube. So the nurse come in and she snatches it out, and I think it was a guy, and he leaves out the door, right? More morphine drip, all Percocet, Tylenol 3, all types of stuff. I had to go Staten Island to a jaw replacement surgeon. So I ended up going through surgery again in 2008. And that did well because it was able to kind of like, you know, push my face up. It's a lot more movement. The ear is still closed up. So I still have no hearing in this ear. But I use it for my advantage, right? They be like, you be acting like you can't hear, and you hear everything.
Well.
Right. Or when I'm trying to sleep, honey, and I sleep on this good ear. Yeah, so.
I didn't hear anything.
Right, King, right? I didn't hear you. Or people start coughing to me, and I just be smiling and nodding, you know? So I've gotten, you know, used to that.
It took 15 days across several states to find the six men involved in the shooting. Jose Carranza, 28, Rodolfo Godinez, 24, Alexander Alfaro, 16, Melvin Jovell, 18, Shahid Baskerville, 15, and Gerardo Gomez, who turned 15 on the day of the attack.
I had some great detectives on this case, to where they kind of like, they befriended me. They had to go give me some glasses so I could start trying to identify.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know I could identify. I don't know if this is right or wrong to say, but the Lord got guided my finger, because these men kind of looked like, right?
Yeah.
I picked them out, you know, even when they asked me like from 7, like 1 to 10, how I felt. Some of them was 8, some of them was 7.
It was reported that some of the men had claimed to be part of the brutal MS-13 gang.
You know, we're used to hearing about the Bloods and the Crips. I didn't learn about MS-13 until it happened to me, and did not even know how gruesome they were until like a month or two later when they started running that show Gangland. And one of the episodes was MS-13.
And it wasn't just the attackers that were rumored to be a gang or said they were in a gang. It's hard to tell if they were actually in a sanctioned MS-13 chapter or if they just said they were in MS-13 because they wanted to be tough. But anyway, since the attackers claimed affiliation with the gang, it was rumored that Natasha and her friends were also part of a gang.
They was hearing all types of stuff. They was hearing that it was some type of rivalry between us. We was taking shots. If we was smoking blunts, if we was taking pills or whatever.
They weren't, but even if they were.
That is our business compared to somebody bringing out knives and machetes and guns.
Yeah.
I seen somebody say, well, you don't know if they was provoked. And it's just like, yo, that's wild.
So they deserve to die?
Yeah. By provoked. They don't have not one gunshot wound, not one knife wound. Nobody was in a fight. If I was talking smack, how did y'all start going circus on four people in the 60 yard for somebody talking smack? Like, what are we talking about? And then come to find out, no, we're just college students that was minding our business.
Because of the potential gang affiliation, after she was released from the hospital, Natasha went into protective custody.
The reason why I'm in protective custody, because nobody knows what the heck happened.
Right.
And I am alive. And I am the only witness. We don't know these people. These people could want to retaliate. They could want to come. And I'm just not. I think everybody's crazy. Everybody's crazy. No one's coming to kill me. I promise you no one's coming to kill me. I don't know no better. I'm a 19-year-old that is still like 19, in shock. Don't understand what death is meaning right now for me. Right.
Yeah. How did they tell you that you were going into protection? What was that conversation like?
Like black ops. Like what? You about to do what? And we about to do who? What? I gotta go back to the house and get my stuff. What are you talking about? Tasha, we moved all the stuff already. It's in store. What you mean you moved all the stuff already? Where are we going? We can't disclose that. You can't disclose that. Where are we going? Well, we got to go to this. We're going to put y'all in a hotel. Then, you know, you'll be able to start to look for housing, this, that, and third. Look for housing.
Oh, wow. They fully had you move out.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I never been able to go back to the house. Yeah, it was like definitely, where am I? Okay, let's talk about it, right?
Because yeah.
We don't even know what town we're in and who is Jasmine Carter, you know, this name. And not only do I lose my closest people in the world to me, I had to leave everything and everybody and go into isolation. This is the time I need everybody to come, you know what I'm saying?
So you're just in a hotel room that whole time?
We're in a hotel for about maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then we end up getting a townhome.
Okay.
They was able to provide us with a townhome and like stipends and things like the government, whoever the people are, they really looked out for us. They really did good. But my heart hit a butt again. It's like, okay, I need to go back to school. I am not staying in this house with this lady.
The lady is her mom.
And I am not staying in the house with this child because I got a brother and he was 5 at the time. And I'm not staying in the house with these people. Y'all, no, I can't go back to North. I gotta go to Delaware. I have to go to Delaware. No, you can go to Mercer County. I'm not going to Calvin College. I'm not doing that. I'm going back to Del State. I start making phone calls to people I do in Delaware. I start talking to like prosecutors and lawyers, and they end up coordinating with Delaware State. And just basically alerting them that I'm on a campus to have security around me, but not like, you know, on me, but just knowing that, you know, if something happens. And by January, I was back in school.
Wow. I mean, just as from like healing perspective, like that's very fast.
Yeah. Trying to drive, can't hear, right? And I have to learn how to use one ear. Jaw messed up. I'm doing PT. But I'm going to school.
Natasha wanted to go back to normalcy at Delaware State, but it was hard to pretend like nothing happened.
I'm also going through self-esteem issues, right? My dad gave us a beautiful smile. Now the thing that I hold dear to me is now not here anymore, my face, right? I get to Dell State. I have a friend. He's always, oh, Tasha, you're so beautiful. Da-da-da-da. He sees me for the first time. He's crying. He starts tearing up. Why? My face is swollen, ear pussed up, mouth. I look crazy. I'm still trying to press through. Like, y'all, I'm here. I'm alive. But these, when seeing me, is just like, girl.
We're going to be right back.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
It was 3 years before the trial started, and with 6 separate defendants, it was going to be a long process.
So the 2010, that's when grand jury started, and it was my first time testifying. And as we're in the room, and we're going over my testimony, and I go, oh yeah, I know who shot me. And it's just like, they just stopped. I'm like, yeah, Melvin Jovell. And Tom looked at me, and Romesh was like...
That's Assistant Prosecutor Thomas McTeague and Assistant Prosecutor Romesh Sukdio.
What, Natasha? I was like...
Excuse me?
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I remember him. He shot me. Da, 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 da. Well, why didn't you tell nobody when you first discovered it? Because I don't know protocol, what happens when people get shot and stuff. Like,
yeah. Nowadays, true crime is so big that like everyone knows.
Yeah, now.
Everyone feels like they can just jump in and be a prosecutor.
Yeah. This is 2010. I have no, I'm not even thinking about court stuff or like watching. I don't know anything. I was in the hospital for about a month, but they caught everybody in a 2.5-week span.
Mm-hmm.
And as they will catch whoever they would catch, I watch the news and I'll be like, I wonder if that's the one in Shopper. He probably is. Then I'll, go to another news article. It wasn't until I seen the guy. Your memory is crazy. I was like, that's the one that shot me. And my dad said, what? And I was like, yeah, that's the one that shot me. And he looked and he sat back. He didn't say nothing. And I just thought, because I don't know nothing about the legal system or mm-hmm. anything. So I felt like I thought that because he was apprehended, like, the people would know what's going on and they got the story, I'll tell my side and that's all I have or whatever. I didn't know that she was supposed to tell somebody. So then after I said that, I had like a slew of more detectives come with other pictures and was like, you know, is this who you say shot you? Da 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 da. From then, by that time, he took the charge and said he shot everybody. But my heart don't believe that. But that's what it is, man.
Malvin Jovell said he was the one who did all the shootings. And he, along with Shahid Baskerville, pled guilty. Gerardo Gomez, Jose Carranza, Rodolfo Godinez, and Alexander Alfaro all pled not guilty.
You think it was someone else that shot?
I think everybody, except for Shahid, because he was up there with me, and his testimony sounded just like my testimony or whatever. I don't think that one person had the heart to just shoot three people, and it's six of y'all, or four people. Yeah, I would think that y'all would want everybody to become some kind of guilty, and y'all trying to initiate in the game. Mm-hmm. But because of the initiation, you're about to go to jail for the rest of your life. I was told and understood that he needed to take that guilty charge in order for him to still be alive and protected. He's the only one that pleaded guilty. Everybody participated.
Yeah. I mean, he pled guilty and then...
Yeah, Shahid. He took a 30-year plea deal.
Part of Shahid Baskerville's plea deal was testifying in the other trials.
I heard his testimony and that broke me. Tore me to pieces. The only one that really testified, right?
Yeah.
And his testimony sounded like my testimony, but he was so much more detailed.
Yeah.
Tore me up. I had to leave the courtroom.
Yeah.
Tore me up.
Natasha testified in all four trials.
I was living in Irvington, which is really close to North. So I'm able to travel back and forth. If anything, they'll send a driver to come get me. And we'll do lunch. They like to feed the girls. We have a great rapport.
Yeah.
So prepping for testimony was that or whatever. But again, it's something different when you're sitting up there. You never know that court is so boring until you got to be a part of the process. Yeah. There was this one significant time that we all still talk about where I had a Corolla and I named her Miss Corolla. And we used to pack her out. You hear me? It would be like seven, like, you know the kids, seven of us.
How do you get seven people in a Corolla?
Oh, we was, Miss Corolla did it tight. So one of the lawyers, he was like, well, you say, you know, you got, it was six people that sat in this bucket seat Corolla and it only sits five. And I'm just like, well, 2 months ago, I just think we set seven in there. And so the court goes, ha! The court goes, wow, right? Everybody's like, ah! Judge is like, everybody calm down. Because, you know, I'm telling you what Ms. Corolla can't do.
And all this time, Natasha was struggling with understanding why this happened at all. But also, why she was the one who survived while the others were murdered.
My goals was to graduate Del State, probably move to Jersey, probably move to Maryland. You know, I'll be talking to my brother was going to be the traveler. He was going to move to Atlanta. He probably would have been a whole preacher right now, his own congregation. But then what I owe for me, not to tell her business, but when you live in North, you kind of grow up hard. We all got a story, right? And her story just seemed a little bit harder than the rest of us. And now that she was an adult, she was just starting to break through, break free, discover financial freedom and be the person who she wants to be a voice, to be a creator, to be, you know, do those things. And then these scums just come and just snatch that from her.
Yeah.
And we did nothing to deserve that. So yeah, grieving, when does grieving stop, right?
Yeah.
When does grieving stop? I was crying really heavy when I seen Iofemi at the gravesite. I mean, just best friend. Oh my God, like the tears. But then when I went to TJ grave, there was a praise. Lord, I thank you. You understand? And so, yeah, it's just been a lot of emotions and walking through grief and trying to find my footing, trying to figure out how in the world are these group of people, you picked me. Why am I still here? Why did you separate me? What did you want me to see? Lord, I thank you for protecting me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so grieving has been a very wave of things.
Yeah.
On January 9th, 2013, the final sentencing hearing for the final criminal trial was done.
How did it feel when the last one, the last trial was finally done?
Kaylin, when I tell you, I was just coasting.
Mm-hmm.
They was locked up already. I was never afraid about nobody coming home.
Yeah.
I just been like living and coasting and doing whatever I supposed to do. If I'm supposed to go to court, I'm going to court. If I, you know, they want me to talk about it, testify, I'm going to do that because they wanted to kill four people, but y'all changed 10 families' lives. 10 families' lives. Three people gone. My whole life is, you know, in a whole nother direction, and y'all in jail for forever.
All four men that went to trial were found guilty on multiple counts. Shahid Baskerville, who pled guilty, was sentenced to 30 years, and the other five sentences ranged from 155 years to 245 years. But Natasha's dealings with the court system weren't over. Natasha, her mother, and the parents of Iofemi and Deshaun sued the school board for the Mount Vernon School for failing to secure the schoolyard with fencing, lights, or working security cameras.
As far as I know, Miss Vicky, who is Iofemi's mom, her sister used to work for a law firm. And that sister had passed away, I think, in 07, right before Iofemi did. So when this thing happened to us, they swooped in and just, like, you know, loved on her and told her, like, we want to pursue this. And of course, they wasn't going to pursue it until the criminal cases was done.
The lawsuit went to trial, but was eventually settled for $5 million. Once the news of the settlement spread, Natasha's mom told her to leave New Jersey.
When you get it, you need to go. Because people going to be on you, this, that, and third, and that's how I ended up in Georgia.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I
almost
mean.
Almost like what they say about winning the lottery. Like,
yes.
People
and
come
it,
out of the
woodwork. Like that. Not me naive, but just like, why would they think that? Like, I didn't get this because I won the lottery.
Yeah.
Like, I went through something. Like, first, the fact that I didn't think that they were going to give it to us, that's my one. Then when they do give it to us, I'm forever grateful. But the vultures was coming. The vultures still around a little bit.
Mm.
Being in a position where all of a sudden everybody's house is burnt up and the flood is coming and the car, the brakes is messed up or whatever. And so we're just like, you know, Tasha, like, you know what I mean? I'm not the best liar. Okay, you probably know this answer. Okay, I can help you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or
it's like, it's a yes because you can't think of a no.
Period. right on the edge. Period. Yes, because I can't think of a no. And so, yeah, kind of just learning how not to answer the phone for every person.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because I've gotten caught up. I have given money here and there and this and that. And not even looking for it back. But, you know, I could probably financially be way more ahead than I was with all the giving and stuff. But I don't regret it because it just seeds in the ground for the blessings to keep coming, you know?
Yeah.
I learned a lot. Georgia was isolation, separation, learning boundaries, learning about myself, learning to be okay with saying no,
mm-hmm.
being okay with the Lord blessing me and not feeling like I need to save the town and the community. But yeah, that was the thing. It helped, you know, it changed life. I was able to go pursue my master's without having to take out loans and purchase a home and a car and stuff like that. But, you know, just kind of reinvesting in myself, trying not to squander it and things.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, I graduated with my master's in social work. After that, I'm just like, okay, now what, right? I did get in the field, but from 16 to 18, life was, I felt like I was driving into depression.
Mm.
I was trying to figure out, why am I here?
Then, in 2018, she had a moment that would change her life.
Jesus came and visited me. And he put his hand in my heart. Because God told me some specific things that day when he came and put his hand in my heart. One of the ways how he got to that was me asking, why would you take TJ? I remember that. I was tall and in my room, slobbing and crying, grieving for TJ so hard. And he said to me, why don't you cry for me? Tasha, you need to grieve. You lost you. I don't even know why am I here? So when I heard that and he said that to me, it broke something in me. Because he knows all, like, and it changed my life around, because it put in perspective, like, I'm literally just not here just because the bullet missed something, right? I'm here for a testimony. You know what I mean? What kind of voice can I be to the people? And then as I've been on this journey, he's been changing my talk. He's been changing my walk. He's been changing the way I see the world.
But it wasn't until she saw her story told back to her that she could really take in all she had been through.
I just did the show 2 years ago, Sins of the City.
Mm-hmm.
And watching that thing, I grieved for Tasha.
Yeah.
And then when I sat back and watched it and watched me tell this story, all the breakdown I had, like, girl, what, you really been through something.
Yeah.
You didn't just walk through this. And so I had to say, no, Tasha, you really did that. You really did that.
Yeah.
You did. All in the midst of, all in spite of. But I grieved. I grieved for Tasha. I grieved for old Tasha. I grieved for the Tasha that had this big, beautiful smile and who was just so naive and so happy and so gullible. I grieve for that girl. I grieve for, I grieve for what would have been, what supposedly should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. But you do have to mourn the life you would have had.
You would have had. Yeah. Yeah. My brother won't be able to meet his nephew.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And if TJ was here, I probably wouldn't name my son Terrence. You know what I'm saying? Because his real name is Terrence. I probably wouldn't name him Terrence. Or would he have even been here and TJ was here? Because I wouldn't have been in Georgia. And this, you know, this man wouldn't have met me here. And where would I have been? Would I have been married already? Would I have been still running the streets? You know what I'm saying? What I hope people are doing? I'm learning in my 37-year friendships are different, right? Would we even still have been friends? And I would have rather that than her not be here at all.
Of course.
I would have loved to see her on Facebook if it got like that. Or she still would have probably been my sister. You know what I'm saying? I would have loved to see Deshaun in D.C. and living his best life and doing the fashion thing and things. So you think about that.
How do you feel about forgiveness?
It's necessary. It is necessary. I'm watching unforgiveness in other people and what it's doing to them. Shoot, even Iofumi's mom, she's not here no more.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that she wore that burden, probably not here because of a broken heart.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And just dwelling. Because it's for you. It's truly for you.
Yeah.
I would never forget her. Well, blocking your blessings because you can't get over that hurdle.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to go ahead and say, oh, I forgive everybody, because what is forgiveness? Like, Shahid, I forgive you for participating in this mess. Or is forgiveness just, it happened and I'm settled with it.
Mm-hmm.
And not letting it weigh heavy on you.
Yeah.
You have to give it up. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, because, I mean, I always think about, like, someone killed my sister.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm just never, you are scum of the earth. I'm never forgiving you. But I don't know if I would, it would take a lot of processing, and I think a lot of therapy for me to let go of the anger.
The anger, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I would ever come to a place where I would say, I forgive that person for doing
it. I forgive that person. Right, right. That's why I say, like, for me, yeah, I'm not in the on a hate thing. Like, I hate them. They changed my life. Like, I don't feel that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like to answer, say, do I forgive them? I don't feel anything, but I'm not, I don't know if I'm be like, Melvin, I forgive you. I don't know. Right. I don't know if I can, if we want to have that conversation.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm just like, I forgive the situation. I hate that it happened, but we're not there anymore, right? My people, I wish they was here. I wish they could be able to have their own kids, and my heart yearns for that. But I'm not holding on for the day that I get the phone call that Melvin isn't here.
Natasha was living quite happily in Atlanta with her son. But then
the Lord told me to come to New Jersey. He said, go forth. My hand is stretched out before thee. Because I specifically asked him, do he want me to go? Because if not, I would say my boy in Georgia being comfortable. But there's something going on in the atmosphere. Being he's going to use me, right? I was talking to a good girlfriend of mine, and I was just like, I feel like Simba. She's like, what you mean? I said, it's like Simba, like something tragic happens, right? And he's told to go, right? And leave. And then, so now he's on his journey, and now he's in the forest eating bugs, living his best life, right? And living, me and Atlanta, living my best life, you hear me? And then Rafiki comes, hello, the Holy Spirit, crack me aside the head, like, it's time for you to leave, girl, because you got some things to do, right?
The pride needs you.
Pride Rock, like.
And so Natasha moved back to her Pride Rock, Newark, New Jersey. And she's still figuring out what her calling is, but she has some ideas.
What kind of work do you want to do? Like, if you could just dream job.
Dream job. I have grown to think that I want to be around the kids. Whether they like middle school, teenagers, whatever. For some reason in my heart, I feel like I want to be in somebody's school telling them, get off the hall. Go down to your classroom. I don't know why. In my heart, I feel like my mission is to talk to these young boys. I'm not sure, but I feel like there's a mission. There's a seed that I'm supposed to plant. I'm not just here just to say, yeah, well, my brother died and my best friend died and I got shot and my other friend died. Like, it's more to this story. It has to be to this story.
And while Natasha hasn't had any contact with Shahid Baskerville, the only one of the six that's getting out of prison one day, she could see a world where he could be part of that story.
Listening to Shahid's last testimony and how he felt, there is a space in the world where me and him might have to go on tour together. Like, we probably have to go to these schools and talk to these boys. What kind of level of forgiveness did that look like? What kind of message and testimony would that look like in the heart of these kids?
I just hope, because he is the one that's getting out, that he does do that reflection work.
Yeah, that's the prayer. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. We going back, even back to forgiveness. Like, I would probably sound crazy to people and say, oh, she's willing to work, and I don't know. Me and Shahid probably in the same room, and I'll probably cuss them out. I don't. No, but God is a good God. I don't know.
You might cuss him out, and then...
It did, right. It did.
They have a great conversation. Who knows? But, I mean, there's also the reality that, like, he might come out of prison harder.
Harder.
Just ready to show his anger to the world.
The world, yeah. Having to, you know, get into that jail culture. But, yeah, right, but we've also seen people trying to change their lives and...
Yeah, totally.
And turn around, you know, since that's my prayer for him. I mean, our young men need to know that there's something different. Like, they need to see a reality check. They need to know, like, that's not the way to go. Like, that those quick bursts of anger, hanging around the wrong people. They need to understand that they can be loved, that there's other things and other outlets to help them with their anger. And, you know, hearing these stories about how, you know, you changing people's lives and stuff. I'm optimistic, you know. I'm surprised that almost 20 years later, people still want to hear from me. So, yeah, and I'm willing to be utilized however I need to be utilized. So.
This is Live to Tell. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. You can follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at Lived to Tell Podcast. And you can follow me at Caitlin Van Maul. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the show. It really helps. You can also join me over on Patreon, where we have a community chat, extended videos, and bonus episodes. That's patreon.com/livedtotell. I'll see you in 2 weeks.